This podcast is part of the Podcast Arcade Network.
Welcome to episode 5 of Paranormal Dads. I'm your co-host, Andy.
I'm Pat.
And I'm Eddie.
We invite you to come along as we go in search of the world's monsters, myths, and mysteries on Paranormal Dads. Episode 5, the amount of episodes you can count on one hand.
That's number awesome. 5 is a lie.
Good short circuit reference there.
Number 5 is a lie.
Johnny 5 is alive. All right, well, as always, we kick off the episode with recent sightings to catch you up to speed on what's been going on.
Ooh.
I'm up to bat for this one. As you know by now, we rotate the segment, so each one of us kind of has a pick at various ones at various times. I have to admit, I'm bending the rules ever so slightly on this one.
Uh-oh.
Because it's not technically extremely recent sightings, but they're sightings nonetheless. They're experiences that have happened to people, and it all revolves around time lapses.
Oh.
Missing time, slips in time, people who have reported really bizarre things out of time, out of place. So, for example, let me refer to my notes. Have you guys ever experienced anything like this where time seemed to go faster or slower, or almost like you experienced a hiccup in the space-time of the fabric of the universe?
Oh, it happens at school, in school, at work.
It just never ends.
those who know me well enough would accuse me of having my own version of time. I'd be like, there's Eddie time.
Eddie time.
Yeah, yeah. It's just one of those things.
I'll never forget the time that you were at the hardware store or something, and I had already arrived to your house because I was a little bit early, and you called me and you said, I'm on the way. I will be there in 5 minutes. That's literal time, not Eddie time. So literally going to be there in 5 minutes.
I know my own conversion rates.
Well, here's some instances of people who had a whole weird, bizarre encounter with time. One of them back in 1968. So again, not recent sightings, but there's a lady by the name of Charlotte Warburton. She walked into a cafe and she had never been there before. Nothing really seemed strange, but she tried to go back there a couple days later and noticed that the little cafe didn't exist.
What?
Like, no construction, nothing. It just wasn't there.
The building wasn't there?
The building wasn't there anymore. She later learned that there was, in fact, a cafe at that exact spot years earlier, but it had been replaced by a supermarket in recent years, and so she had no other explanation other than to admit that maybe she had stepped into the past, went too far down the rabbit hole, and she ended up in the past, walked into a cafe, you know, had a croissant and a coffee, and went back there the next day. Oops, it's a Walmart. You know?
And they probably made the croissant with real butter, not margarine.
Yeah,
that's right.
She started like demanding, like falling down style, like I want my muffin or whatever. They're like, man, this is not a diner.
So talk about an expired muffin. Holy wow. Cow! She walked into the past and ate something, got a little coffee.
You know, this can probably be chalked up to what we, you know, I think the word déjà vu is used too easily.
Yeah.
For things, and I don't know if I've ever experienced. Well, maybe this is a time slip, but a time slip within my own life,
mm-hmm.
where. In some cases, I wasn't even dreaming. It would be a situation where I was maybe daydreaming. Like, I was awake, completely awake. Like, I remember several of these things happened when I was in school. Like you said, Pat, where I'm just kind of like, I'm not there. My right. body's here, but my brain's somewhere else. And I remember vividly having this image of me roller skating to this music that gave me a very intense emotion. And I was a fairly young kid. I was like second or third grade, not two. I was two or three, you know, second or third grade age. No, I was like third grade, and I had this image of me skating with this like kind of an emotional response within myself. And it just kind of flashed through my head and went away. And I was totally awake. I wasn't sleeping. And then years down the line, and I didn't even know how to roller skate when I was in second or third grade. It was a completely abstract idea. It was just like, oh, okay, whatever. Fast forward, my first job in high school was a skate guard. Which is fact.
Awesome.
I loved that job. I do.
I would referee jersey and everything.
Yes. I had the ref jersey. Yeah. You know, and it was such a great job. But the point was, at the end of the night, the DJ, who was also the head of military police, because I lived on a military base. And so that was his night gig. He loved it.
He was the DJ.
He was the DJ. And so he would play different songs. And one time, and it was towards the end of the school year, and we were all kind of, and the skating rink stays open through the summer, but it has different hours. So we were all kind of not saying goodbye, but kind of saying goodbye because it was reduced hours and all that stuff. So the end of this season, he played, and we were clearing out the rink, and we kind of roller skate around and kind of pick up garbage and all that stuff. And he played the song "Take Me Home" by Phil Collins.
Oh,
and
nice! Your favorite.
I'm one of my favorites. And so, and I'm roller skating around very slowly, and I look over, and there was this girl that I had kind of a crush on, and it was just very picturesque, you know.
So it was what happened in your daydream vision,
precisely. And so I don't know. I mean, was that a glimpse into my own future? I mean, it's just one of those things that has happened quite a bit.
I don't even think it's a stretch to say that it was.
Yeah.
I mean, and then you get into that territory and it makes you wonder, was that a part of, you know, is fate real? Is destiny real? If so, and if it's set in stone that there's just certain life events that you're going to experience, maybe you were intuitive enough to have a little glimpse into a future event that you knew was going to be a part of your life.
Maybe. I don't know. It was cool.
Bizarre.
It was more emotions, you know, and visuals. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Kind of cool.
But you didn't need a 60-year-old muffin like this Charlotte lady.
I can still taste it in my mouth.
I wonder what the FDA would think about that.
Was there an FDA back in the...
Probably not.
Exactly.
Your kid eats some lead. Well, here's another story. It takes place in 1954. So again, pardon me for bending the rules on recent
sightings. My stuff's more recent than that.
Yeah, I know, exactly. <I'm kidding. laughs> So in 1954, there was a man that was trying to get through customs at Haneda Airport. Anyway, it was in Tokyo, and he was having a bit of trouble. He claimed to be from a country that didn't exist. And he actually had a passport and stamps to prove it.
Whoa.
So his passport was actually from a country named Taured. That's T-A-U-R-E-D, Taured, which he claimed that was between Spain and France. So obviously customs officials pulled out a map and asked him if he meant Andorra. And the guy actually became kind of irritated. He said, yes, that's where I'm talking about. But he was irritated because he says it's not called Andorra, it's called Taured. And he claimed that it had been a lie, you know, the country had been around for 1,000 years. He had never heard of the country known as Andorra. So they put him up in a hotel room for the night while police tried to figure everything out. And there was armed guards posted right outside of his hotel room that night. And despite that, the man vanished into thin air.
Whoa.
They opened up his hotel room in the morning and he wasn't there. Not only that, but his passport and some of his ID and everything, it was stored in the security facility at the office of the airport. And that mysteriously disappeared from the vault.
Gone.
So you got the guy gone, passport vanished. So, I mean, there's theories that maybe he truly was from a country in the future known as Taured, which would be... You know, apparently situated between Spain and France, you know, near the country of Andorra. Weird. It's one of those weird ones that makes you shake your head.
Because you can't go back and look for Taured in the past. It's not there.
It's not there.
But you can't do any research on things that don't exist yet. That's insane.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a bit of a noodle scratcher.
I forget about the guy's name, and this is where, hey, if you know this name, please email us at paranormaldads@gmail.com or message us on Facebook. It was a guy not too long ago in the 80s came out as a time traveler. You remember this guy?
Yeah. What was the name? It was...
his family lives in Florida. Pat, make him look this up while we stall. Hey,
we need
how
like
things?
A side guy who just does Google searches for us on the spot.
Are you interested in being our side guy, somebody?
We need to bring the kids in to be interns. That's what we need.
That's Colton right. The intern. Poor kid didn't ask for any of this. But the point was he had made some pretty, you know, ambitious claims that he was a time traveler.
Right.
And I think even on some level, he didn't even
his name was John something. Titor. John Titor.
Titor, yes. Yeah.
T-I-T-O-R.
Titor.
Titor, I believe. You can fact check that, Pat.
And he had made enough, apparently he had made enough observations that it made people pay attention.
Right.
And
John Titor.
Yeah.
John Titor. Yeah, there you go. Titor. Yeah, he was almost like a modern day Nostradamus. Some of his predictions and kind of prophecies about the future were specific enough that you take up, you know, sit up and take notice, but they were loose enough that you could kind of sort of interpret it however you wanted.
Right.
But it got enough people interested that, you know, and this was mostly online. It was through like chat rooms and stuff.
It was chat rooms. Well, yeah, it almost looks like, from what I'm seeing right here, is that it was a fictional name used on several bulletin boards during 2000-2001. But you guys are saying this happened in the 80s. So maybe I'm
wrong. Maybe you were mistaken. We don't,
I was mistaken. Again. I was mistaken when he showed up. But
right.
But I want to say it was in like maybe the 90s or early 2000s. But he had made some pretty, pretty bold claims. And I think the family that still exists or claim that he was telling the truth, it's vague enough, like you said, where it's hard. But pretty bold stuff.
Right. Another one I'll share real quick, and this one is a little bit more of a recent sighting having to do with a time slip. And now don't judge me, but a couple years ago I was in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I was attending a time travel convention.
No judges.
Did you guys know this about
Paranormal
me?
Death. I had no idea.
Yeah, so it was a time travel convention, not a Star Trek or Star Wars kind of deal, but a scientific look at the implications of, can it be possible? Can it be achieved?
Could have been a Star Trek convention. They use time travel in every story almost. Story.
But anyway, it was really cool because they had a panel of speakers. Some were physicists. A lot of them were actually Native Americans, deeply spiritual, who had their own weird experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the ladies there, I'm not going to give her name just because if I get any of the facts wrong, I don't want to upset her. She should tell her story herself. But I'll just say that she's a well-known author, speaker, and researcher who lives in California. And she shared a true story. And she's a very sincere person, so when she's telling this, you know that nothing's fabricated. It's like she's talking about the weather. Mm-hmm. It's just what happened.
Right.
And she shares a story that I think it was actually her first husband. The two of them and their kids were at a train station. And again, I'm sorry if some of the facts are wrong. I think she said it was in Europe somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But they were at a train station, and her husband at the time had their young kid, 3 or 4 year old kid, piggyback style on the shoulders, right? Piggyback ride. And the kid is goofing around, starts to fall back, almost like as if the child's going to fall onto the train tracks. And she said, and it was just like in the movie, she said, it was like, it was practically like a record scratched. And, you know, there was like a, ooh. And she said, time not only appeared to slow down, she says it literally slowed down. People froze, just like in a movie, just like in a scientific.
What?
She saw people and the train and everything stopped, and it was almost like the mannequin challenge.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, right, yeah.
Right? So everyone stops, there's no sound, and she's able to walk over, pick her child up off her husband's shoulders, and set him safely on the ground so he doesn't fall into the train track area. And then as soon as she did, and as soon as her kid was safe and her husband, you know, was steadied, it's like everything sped up and everything started to go normal speed again. People were talking, people were chatting. Nobody seemed to notice anything different. Like she's the only person who experienced that pause in reality.
Well, you hear that a lot about, you know, accidents and just very traumatic events that people say it's almost like time stood still or things slowed down. They saw everything happen in slow motion.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if it was kind of like an instance of something like that. But that just sounds really, really out there, though.
It is. It really is. And it's, you know, it's been proven that people do experience their own reality. It's been proven in tests. You know, you get 10 people who witness a car accident, you interview them all separately and independently, and they're going to tell you 10 different versions of what happened and what they saw.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe in her version of reality, it slowed down enough where it seemed to come to a dead stop, because she made it seem like she had a good 30 seconds to stroll over there casually and do whatever she wanted and then come back, and then at times sped back up. So,
well, that's precisely how a time slip would work. I mean, perceptively to everyone else, they would have seen normal speed, you know, and she just somehow grabbed this kid quick enough. But for her, it was like completely slow-mo.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I love it.
Yeah. Those are the best stories, ones that are so out there that you have no explanation for. Yeah. Anyway, there's your recent sightings.
Yes.
It's time for pop, culture, and the paranormal.
You guys ever play with Barbie dolls?
All the time. I mean, never. No.
Did you own a Ken?
Yes.
I had G.I. Joes. I'm not talking about the little 1980 ones. I'm talking the big boys. The 12 beards. The 12 inchers.
Yeah, the 12 inchers. Wasn't that a scene in Toy Story where she was hanging out with Ken and then G.I. Joe shows up and then she jumps in the car and drives off with him?
Oh, yeah. It was a whole awkward love triangle kind of thing. Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway, this comes from listverse.com. I found an article called 10 Freaky Dolls You Don't Want to Play With.
That sounds like we're in dangerous territory.
10 freaky dolls you don't want to play with.
Are any of these from Japan?
Well, they could be. I don't know. Okay. But we're going specifically to number 6. Okay. And that's our story for today.
Uh-oh.
This is called the Pulau Ubin Barbie.
God bless you.
Pulau Ubin Barbie. And the story goes that...
Is that like Malibu Barbie?
Sounds similar.
So Barbie's arguably the most popular doll in the world. And so popular, in fact, that a dead girl requested it, purchased for her from beyond the grave.
Pat knows how to bring home the bacon.
he's setting us up here.
Okay,
well,
go for
well
it,
the
man.
Story goes, this is back in like about 1914, right as World War One is breaking out.
They had Barbies
and,
back then?
Yeah.
Oh my God. World War One.
And, Barbie did not exist then.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll
get there.
I'm getting ahead of ourselves.
Anyway.
I'll shut up.
At the beginning of the war, on this island, it was an island in Singapore called Pulau Ubin, or just Ubin, I guess it's oftenly referred to. The British mistrusted many foreigners in their colonies, particularly Germans. And when the war was just breaking out, they rounded up all the Germans, which is so common, you know, look at what we did to the Japanese in World War II. Yeah, rounded them up and, you know, basically arrested them, took their property. This particular family lived on a coffee plantation, ran a coffee plantation. So they came into this plantation and arrested the family. The young girl escaped and ran into this wooded area near the plantation. Unfortunately, she fell off a cliff and was killed.
Oh, boy.
All right. So after the war, the family comes back, looks for the daughter. They can't find her anywhere. They leave dejected. A time later, the locals actually find the remains of the daughter at the bottom of the cliff, and they bury her or place her basically in a Japanese Taoist temple there on the island, and that's where she
above ground grave kind of sort of thing.
Right, yeah, okay. You know, maybe it was her ashes or whatever,
like a tomb or something. Yeah.
So she stayed there until fast forward now to 2007 when Barbie did exist.
Okay, here we go.
Oh boy.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a local man had this dream one night about a little girl, little white girl, and she wanted this Barbie doll. Next night, he has the same dream. Night after that, he has the same dream once again. So the next day, he goes down to the local toy store, walks in there, and he finds the exact Barbie he's been dreaming about. And he's like, I got to get this thing. Takes it up to the temple, places it where the little girl's remains are, and it's just kind of become this thing now where people flock to this place just to see this Barbie doll. And whether or not the dreams ended, I assume they did.
I would assume they did. I mean,
because it's just kind of become this famous site of, you know, it was the little girl from beyond the grave wanting this Barbie doll. So the guy went out and got it, and now he doesn't dream about her anymore.
No.
So he's like psychically plugged into her spirit or something. Do other people, you know, come and lay down a Barbie as an offering? I mean, is there like 1,000 Barbie dolls on this?
It makes you wonder if that happens. You know, I know a lot of people. I was looking at some of the pictures because you can actually see the temple on YouTube. There's a some video somebody shot, and you can see the little Barbie doll standing in there in the temple. But you see people placing, like, you know, for their friends, cans of Guinness and things like that. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if multiple people come there and just drop Barbie dolls. It's probably starting to look like a toy store there now.
Yeah.
Well, once again, we're paranormal dads and we all have kids. So this is something we can, she's a kid spirit. She's, hey, I got a good thing going now. I'm getting some Barbies. I want to keep this good moment, this Christmas momentum going.
But if you can't make it to Singapore, you can at least buy, Mattel has an entire line. They call the Haunted Beauty Collection. And it's actually kind of like a paranormal themed Barbie collection. There's one called the Haunted Beauty Doll, which is kind of like a ghostly looking Barbie. You know, Mattel does not promise that there's anything paranormal about it. But I'm just thinking about, you know, a few weeks ago we were talking about that museum, that traveling museum that would 3D scan haunted objects. I wonder if they are going to be scanning haunted Barbies in the future.
What if Billy asks for one?
Well, that's what I was thinking too. I wonder if Billy's got, you know, some of these Barbies in his collection. There's actually a number of different ones. There's one called Haunted Beauty Vampire Barbie, Haunted Beauty Mistress of the Manor Barbie, Haunted Beauty Zombie Barbie.
We've gone next level, folks.
Who would have thought that Mattel would come out with this?
You know, some of these are already out of print, apparently. But you can buy some of these online. I'm guessing they're probably starting around $100.
Yeah,
you're going to be putting some money down on these things. I'm sure they're wildly popular. But yeah, you'll have to ask Billy about this and see if he knows anything about that.
You know, I'm good with any doll as long as it doesn't sit up and look at me. You know, what's that movie, Annabelle or something? It had to do with the dolls. I didn't see it, but...
I think so. But I don't know.
Forget that, man.
Yeah, like
forget
Chucky. That. Get out of here. I don't want any of that in my life.
There is a... good choice, by the way, for the pop culture segment, because Barbie is like the most popular doll ever made, hands down. There's this place over in... speaking of dolls, there's this place over in... Crescent, Iowa, I think, right over the Mormon Bridge, basically, and it's over there, and it's just a little diner. I think it's called the Pink Poodle.
I've heard of the Pink Poodle.
Food is phenomenal, dude.
Is it?
Phenomenal place, haunted as hell.
What?
You go in there, and my wife and I and our daughter, we went in there because we were just out there at a nature preserve kind of nature hike thing, and then we found this place. There was no cars there, and it was a Sunday afternoon, and we thought, well, is this place closed? So we walk in. And a really friendly staff member kind of greets you at the door, but the place is empty and it's quiet and you just feel like you're being watched. And it's a big place, a lot of square footage. It's a really old building. So we're just constantly looking over our shoulders. My wife sees a shadow dart across the room. We ask the waitress, look, do you guys get a lot of ghost sightings here? She kind of raises her eyebrows and says, all the time.
Wow. What are you guys doing for dinner tonight?
Yeah, exactly. Let's go to the Pink Poodle.
There it is.
Anyway, dolls, though. I'm sorry, I got off on a tangent there. Dolls. You walk in and there's these old, these old-fashioned little dolls. You know, not Barbie dolls, but the dolls that are dressed as, like, little girls.
Yeah.
Like, 1930s style dolls. Dozens of them in glass cases all over the entryway.
And their eyes probably follow you everywhere you go.
You know, you're trying to eat your meatloaf and mashed potatoes, and, like, you know, little Annabelle over here is eyeballing you.
Order the pie!
Like, no! Annabelle, no!
Eddie's scraping his mashed potatoes. This means something.
This is important.
This is important.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know if I could eat at a Pink Poodle now.
Well, just don't look the dolls in the eye.
Why are they there?
Andy? Yeah. And order the pot roast. It's phenomenal.
So if you want your haunted Barbie, go out to Amazon.com or your local Barbie retailer and check it out. We'll have links to listverse.com in the show notes.
And now it's time for the main mystery.
The main mystery. I'm so excited. Did I have the main? Oh, the last time I had the main mystery, it was Bigfoot time.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Which was kind of a shared main mystery. This main mystery is your own choosing right
here.
This
is my own wheelhouse right here.
And it's rather aquatic.
It's sticking with our last episode's theme. This is a aqua.
Oh, it is.
Aqua
and it's
month.
A place.
Yeah,
rather than a thing or a creature, it's a place.
That's true.
We probably should have saved these for Shark Week. Oh, that's Megalodon.
That's Megalodon.
Yeah.
So we're going to be discussing as the main mystery, Atlantis, the lost civilization of Atlantis. This is one of those things that as a little boy, you know, there's I think key things that I think awaken us to the paranormal, and some of that stuff is like lost cities and civilizations and things like that. And this is not connected directly to Atlantis, but there was a Nickelodeon cartoon called The Lost City of Gold, and it was, you know, loosely kind of like tied to the El Dorado story or myth or maybe a real place. But that cartoon, which was, I believe, done by a foreign company but aired on Nickelodeon, very cool show. I do recommend it to anybody who maybe not heard of this or whatever, but worth watching. But it excited my brain for the notion of ancient people that also had really advanced technology. Mm-hmm. So being clued in on that, Atlantis is just like the next thing, you know. So for people who, I'm sure our listeners are probably somewhat aware of Atlantis, but just to kind of give a quick little crash course, Atlantis was mentioned by Plato in one of his stories about what people assume to be a fictional place. But one of the things that's worth noting is in his description of Atlantis, it had a lot of specific details. The layout of the city, and there was some debate on whether it was a city, like a giant city or a city-state, or if it was an actually like an island unto itself. They said people assumed, not they, the interpretation is that because it got supposedly destroyed by a tsunami or a giant flood type event.
A volcano.
That they were kind of tying that to it being an island. But there's people who say it could be a little mini continent of sorts. Mm-hmm. Regardless, an ancient civilization that had high technology that was wiped off the face of the earth. And in the story of Plato, it was referenced as a kind of an and people once again thought it was kind of an allegory, as a way of kind of warning people against their own hubris, kind of like a Tower of Babylon kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, don't get too proud of yourself. You'll get Atlantis'd.
It's a verb.
Exactly. I had such an Atlantis day, man. It was terrible. But as time has gone on, there have been archaeologists and crypto-archaeologists and all these people, ancient technologist-type people who study, you know, who are theorizing that there's a very strong likelihood that Atlantis could have been a real location. And in that, you've got some specific stories and things and other discoveries as of late that point to it as a strong possibility of being a real place.
And I said their technology was way beyond what we have presently. So you're not talking about just, you know, smartphones and big screen TVs. Like, they had technology that to us would seem like magic, correct? That's the myth.
There's some discussion that some of the technology that they had would either be somewhat like relatable to stuff we have now or even advanced by our measure. Mentions of machines that were capable of flying, advanced healing type technologies and communication type stuff, and even weaponry in some regards.
And you catch wind of also some of their technology having to do with crystals. Like, it was crystal. I've read this in a few different sources, like crystal based technology.
Yeah,
which in a way kind of makes sense, because crystals are in a weird way are still used to store information, right? Because in our cell phones, there's literally little crystals that help hold data.
It's funny, we hear that and we get like, people will get defensive at first because they're picturing like Superman's Fortress of Solitude. Yeah. Like, this is how we. But I mean, right here and now, we are recording on a device and we have phones that rely on crystal type technology to store and bring out and bring forth data. Crystal-based technology, also advanced mathematics and astronomy. And these things start to get validated when there's a fairly recent discovery of a buried temple. And I forget where it's at. I want to say it's in, the country escapes me. It might be Syria, called Göbekli Tepe. And they began to unearth, of course, classic thing. Sheep herder finds giant piece of stone sticking out of ground. They dig and find it's not a city, but it's a site. It's big. And once again, they're like, this is so old that the technology, construction technology methods simply didn't exist. It's not even like, how'd they do it? It's like, they would not have been able to do this given what we understand human technology to be at that time. So you take something like that, and then also in an area of Greece, this is where I'm going to be very vague, and please research this as well, the glory of Google. the Antikythera device was discovered maybe, I don't know, 30 years ago or so. And that device, For a while, people could not quite decipher what its purpose was, but it had the actual construction of it had fine-toothed gears and a lot of miniature clockwork-style mechanisms inside of this device that over time and over an analysis of this, it was a, how to describe it, it was a highly accurate measurement tool for something. And the more that we've scanned this and tried to break it down, the, from what I understand, the most current thought on this essentially computer is that you could type in, or not type in, that had dials, you could dial in a certain date and it would then on a series of discs show you the position, projecting, predicting the position of certain astrological bodies. So Venus will be here in 2 years, you know, with this device. A device that they said, once they said archaeologists and technologists, based off of the carbon dating, which there's some debate on that, but within a certain area of time, still did not have the technology capable of developing and building something like this.
This is really old and it's really advanced.
It's really super old and it's too smart for the people at the time.
Right. Essentially. Now, we're looking at a picture of it right now. It almost looks like a wheel and there's some spokes and there's wheels within wheels. And I mean, if you found it, it's something that you look at and you're like, okay, it's clearly not natural. That's a man-made something.
Definitely.
But it's brown. It's really rusted. It, you know, you can tell at one point in time, it probably would have, been a little bit more smoothed edges. It looks like there's a lot of barnacles and stuff on it.
Well, yeah, it was found in the sea.
Yeah.
That picture almost looks like the bottom of my lawnmower.
It really does.
Looks like the bottom of a lawnmower. All grassed up.
But so when you come across hyper-advanced construction methods, when you come across measurement devices like this that simply should not exist for the era in which they're from, and then you have concurrent stories of civilizations that had advanced travel and vehicles and healing and understanding of irrigation, you get into a discussion of, well, how could this not necessarily be a real thing?
Mm-hmm.
And as more and more exploration happens around areas that are people, I forget the exact city, but there's these sunken cities that they have found off the coast of the Middle East and also off of Japan.
Well, that's one of the interesting things about Atlantis is there's more than one location that people think it is.
Right.
And they're not necessarily near each other.
No.
You know, one of them's in Greece. One of them is in the Bermuda Triangle, like we talked about last time.
Yeah.
I think I even heard somebody mention something about Canada or Wisconsin or something, like under one of the Great Lakes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that Atlantis would come with a lot of cheese.
Cheesy.
Cheese curds.
You know, there's locations in Europe. You know, it's just people can't necessarily agree where it was supposed to go.
Yeah,
that's a big debate.
Although Plato did give some kind of indication about where
he gave some loose indication of where it was, and also the actual shape of it, of the actual, like, he was saying it was like a ringed city where it had, I believe it was three rings. Yeah, like a ring of water and then a ring of land and then a ring of water. And there is a location, right, like you said, Pat, right around or right outside of Greece.
Right.
That I think a lot of I think if there are, you know, Atlantean researchers, I think a lot of them kind of lean towards that location, because a lot of based off, and a lot of this, they said pretty much all of this stuff is based off of the description off of Plato originally. And then a lot of the other things are referenced. Another little sidebar is that there's another lost civilization connected to Atlantis called Lemuria.
Yep.
And where apparently the name being where lemurs, the island was actually populated with a bunch of lemurs. And once again, tales of an ancient civilization, highly advanced technology. And then I think there's another one off the coast of Ireland that had the ability to cloak itself. So you could see it, and then on another day you couldn't see it. And that was the big one for the sailors and the seamen of myth of the past, was that sometimes you just wouldn't see this.
Sometimes it was there, sometimes it wasn't. Same thing happens with my money.
Yeah.
Like it's there one day and the next day it's just gone.
Atlantean money.
Yeah. But you... now, it's funny you mentioned Lemuria, though. Lemuria. You read some of these myths and legends, and the appearances of the people within those civilizations are greatly different. Like,
yeah.
Atlanteans are supposed to be like more tall and elegant and lean, and it said that people from Lemuria were more short and squatty and more like earthy based.
Yeah.
You know, so it's almost like they're just differences in their civilization, I guess.
Yeah.
That's me. I'm short and squatty and earthy based.
That describes Pat. That's on his Facebook profile. Short, squat, earthy based. It's such an interesting thing because, and this is a larger discussion maybe about a lot of things that we've brought up where people have, where the past kind of informs the present. But it's one of those things that as you start breaking down certain past stories and then certain things pop up to validate those things, it becomes more and more of a discussion topic. One of my favorites to bring up as a paranormal dad to people who are maybe a little more skeptical was, if you look at, there was a certain point in time where, like, we all know what lions look like. In fact, there's not a time in any of our lives as modern humans that we've never seen a lion. Like, you know what a lion is. And there was a time in human history where if you didn't live around them, you didn't know what they looked like. And so sailors, which would, you know, that would be the next best thing to the internet back then, mm-hmm. would see these things. And sometimes they would just draw them the best they could. And if you look at early renderings, early old drawings of lions, they look like, the body looks good. It looks like a lion. But the face looks like it has a person face. And if you look at old paintings of lions, you'll see this. They look like they just got, it's like a people face. And art historians and culturists have said that's just because so few people saw these things that that's what people thought lions looked like. They thought that they had people faces.
Well, and they had no reference.
No reference.
They had nothing to by which to compare it to. And,
right.
You know, and that's what we do. We try to, and again, back to what we talked about earlier, you get 10 people look at the same exact thing and come up with 10 different reports as to what they saw. So,
yeah.
But people scoffed at it probably, right? And said, a hybrid of a large cat and a person? Give me a break.
You mean tell me there's a cat out there that's got an afro and it's got knives for hands? Get out of here. You know, you're dumb. And then, lo and behold, there's a lion. And so for my mindset, and this is my challenge to people who maybe tend to be, and there's nothing wrong with being critically minded, we should be, but the lion's a real thing. And there was a point in time in human history, not too long ago, where in our brains, it wasn't.
Right.
And so as information comes in, your definition of reality shifts. And so the ancient civilization of Atlantis, I mean, why couldn't that be? An offshoot population that just managed to somehow crack into some knowledge that didn't exist yet.
Are you guys familiar with a guy named Edgar Cayce?
Oh, yeah.
He was a popular psychic back in the 1960s. And Atlantis was one of his topics he always seemed to go back to. And a lot of the predictions he made and the people he talked about, he claimed were Atlanteans. They were from Atlantis. But he claimed that, I think it was back in the 60s, he claimed that Atlantis was going to rise again. Mm-hmm. And it would actually be coming up closer to the Bermuda Triangle than it would be to like Greece or some of those other places. So, you know, it's, I don't know, you know, some of his stories, you know, the kind of stuff he predicted, but he's a name that comes up a lot when you're talking about Atlantis.
Yeah, it really does. I think, now people can research this themselves, but I think it was even prior to the 60s, Pat, because I remember seeing a documentary. It was like the very early 1900s. Like, he was way ahead of his time for doing the psychic thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he did. He made a lot of predictions involving Atlantis, including one that seemed really outlandish. So the Sphinx in Egypt, you know, the little the critter with the two paws, the two huge paws. He predicted that there's some information that tied to Atlantis that was buried in a chamber inside one of the paws of the Sphinx in Egypt. Funny thing is, come time when people wanted to explore, there were some political loopholes and whatnot, so no one's allowed to go in there to see what it actually is. But they did like ground penetrating radar kind of thing and all these like scans without going in there.
Yeah.
They said there's a large chamber with a large item that could be a trunk or something in the paw of the Sphinx, but nobody will ever know what it is, or if it's tied to Atlantis, or if Edgar Cayce was right, and it's all because of political red tape.
That just eats me alive.
I know.
It eats me alive. It's even if it's not real. Let's get open. Let's see.
It's probably the treasure from Curse of Oak Island sitting in there.
There it is. Exactly. Those poor guys. Or it's a giant pile of glow sticks. What? What?
Glow sticks? Boom! Just go.
Yeah! Atlantis, rave!
Sorry. We're just going to beat that till it's a dead horse.
You know, the best show, in my opinion, one of the best shows that ever came out on History Channel was the Ancient Aliens show.
Yes, it's still on TV, dude.
It's still on. It's like 19 seasons.
Season 10. In. We just watched 10. One two nights ago.
Here it is. And they got the one of the main guys.
Guilty pleasure.
He's Georgios Seleucidas. I'm butchering Sucralos. His name. He's a Greek guy. Anyway, his hair like starts as pretty big and like kind of Einstein-ish, but then with each season it gets bigger and taller. Yes. And so the camera pans out further and further to get his whole head on the frame.
It's glorious.
But anyway, he's a pretty knowledgeable guy. They got a lot of other people on there talking about how ancient civilizations had technology that was way, way beyond what we give them credit for. And I'm sure they've covered Atlantis in one of the episodes.
They've discussed it. I mean, and obviously it's ancient aliens, so they kind of tie a lot of stuff to this. Right. And the supposition is, and this is where it doesn't have to be aliens, where there's a great game out there. Well, tying this to all sorts of pop culture stuff. There's a great game out there called Assassin's Creed. And in Assassin's Creed, spoiler alert for anybody out there, the end of the game reveals that there's an artifact that's being basically hidden throughout human history. And all this what this artifact is they call it the Apple. It's from Eden. And it turns out that Eden is actually an advanced city where a more technologically advanced race of humans are enslaving a less advanced race of humans to do their like menial labor. And the point is, it's a fictional story based around the notion of advanced technologies. And I just think that, you know, the notion that all of humanity progresses at the same rate. I mean, right here, right now, as we're recording on a computer and we're going to be using the internet to broadcast this, there are still tribes in Africa that, or in other parts of the world as well, that eat and hunt and do things that have been the same way for thousands of years and existing at the same exact time.
Right.
So, I mean, fast forward when we're gone, there could be another group of humans. But man, there's no way that this group and this group existed at the same time. Look how advanced these people were, yeah. And look how, you know, primitive these people were, and you know, not primitive, but in the sense of technological advancements, air quotes. You know, we're living it now.
But, you know, assuming Atlantis was a real place and technology was light years ahead of its time, you know, if water is involved, it can leave basically no trace that there ever was a civilization. There's been studies that have proven that if without the upkeep that humans provide to buildings and infrastructure and things like this, you take, let's assume there's a virus wipes out humans tomorrow, we're all gone, you know, buildings are overgrown with vines, you know, bridges collapse, you know, and that you scale it forward, you know, 100 years, 1,000 years, it would only take like 1,000 or so years before there's no trace that humans were ever on this planet to begin with. Everything crumbles. Everything is down to nothing. Now, Mount Rushmore might still be there. The Great Pyramids might still be there. But
monolithic stone.
The monolithic stones, because those don't age like that.
Well, and you look at a place like Chernobyl, where they had that big nuclear disaster in Russia. It's just, you look at the pictures now and how the Earth is kind of starting to take that place over again.
Yeah.
And the buildings are just corroding and basically turning to dust. It's pretty amazing how in what to us is kind of a short time, you know, the Earth has just kind of taken it back, and it's just all, everything's overgrown and almost like the ending of Logan's Run. Did you ever see that mm-hmm. movie back yeah. in the 70s? But they get to Washington and everything is just, you know, covered in ivy and
all we are is dust in the wind.
We're just dust in the wind.
Sorry.
Can't ending say. On a really morbid Sarcasm. Note here. Nothing you do will ever matter in 1,000 years.
Except the love you show.
That's right. You take that with you for all of eternity.
And this podcast will still be there. Hanging out in space.
It will. Yeah, it'll be halfway to Pluto by then.
Yeah, but what are your thoughts on Atlantis? What fascinates you about that? A lot of great movies out there, too, about and documentaries. So just explore yourself crazy. My personal favorite is Atlantis, the Disney movie. The anime starring Michael J. Fox. So I guess with that, if you enjoy Paranormal Dads Podcast, we invite you to subscribe to the show on iTunes. And while you're there, drop us a review. Listener comments help us improve the show and focus on topics that interest you. Thank you all for listening to Paranormal Dads Podcast.
And most of the sound effects heard on the Paranormal Dads Podcast are courtesy of freesound.org. A complete list of this episode's freesound contributors can be found in the show notes at paranormaldads.podbean.com. Browse, download, and share sounds at www.freesound.org.
That's a wrap, boys.